servants are patient. So he knows that they are good people, they're patient people, and they can bear these trials and tribulations with patience, and they won't, you know, lose their patience at these times. So God gives them, you know, He sends these, you know, problems upon His servants, so, you know, as a test, so that when they react in a positive and in a good manner, you know, their rewards can increase in the hereafter and in the akhirat. By way of example, and this is a very beautiful hadith, the Prophet said, Allah feeds His believing servant with ordeals like a mother feeds her child. Just like a mother would feed her child with love and affection, God Almighty, He also gives His believing servant, meaning His servant who He knows is a believer and is a mu'min and will bear those trials with patience, He gives them those problems so that the believer can grow, you know, with by facing those trials and tribulations. And so because of this, we say that the actually opposite to what we saw those people assumed, it's the people who haven't been, you know, afflicted with problems who are despised by God, not the ones who have been afflicted with them. This is why Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam says, I hate for a man to be immune to ordeals in this world's life and not suffer any afflictions. This is something that the Imam does not wish upon any of his companions, any of his followers. He wishes for them to be tried and for them to be afflicted with these problems so that they can, you know, grow by means of, you know, dealing with them in a positive manner. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at trials and ordeals as bounties by God, in the words of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, after creating much havoc in the middle of the night on Monday, July the 3rd, uprooting families and causing much destruction and terror, over 1,000 Israeli soldiers retreated from the Jenin refugee camp. 44 hours of Zionist occupation and violence caused the death of at least 12 Palestinians, millions of dollars in damage, and now both the United Nations and the European Union are condemning the Israeli regime for the terror it unleashed in Jenin. But will they hold Tel Aviv accountable? Well, stay with us as we take a look at all of this on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guest now to the program. Sarah Wilkinson, pro-Palestinian activist out of the UK. And Saad Nim, professor of political science out of Beer Zed University. Ramallah, thank you both for being with me. Well, let's start this off in Midlands. Sarah, when the Israeli military left Jenin, its spokesman announced that its goals had been accomplished. What do you think those goals were, and from your perspective, what was accomplished? or not?
Well, in a short answer, I think absolutely nothing was accomplished apart from, well, aside from the murder of at least 12 Palestinians and the wounding of around 140 people, some of whom are still on life support. Nothing was accomplished. I think the Israelis went in with a plan to assassinate or execute designated Palestinians, and they didn't achieve that, and neither did they manage to get into the heart of Jenin. So the only thing that was really accomplished was for the Palestinian side, who saw it as a victory. I think the terror that the Israelis inflicted on the Palestinian people of Jenin is a state-organized terror. They were war crimes after war crimes after war crimes. When we see the ambulances were blocked from being able to rescue the injured, that's another war crime on top of sending in missiles into a very compact, densely populated area such as Jenin. And we have to remember that these people are already in exile. They've already been forcibly displaced, or their parents have. So these are refugees that were then made to be secondary refugees, and then they were shot at and tear-gassed even when they were forcibly expelled from their homes. They didn't flee, as the Israeli propaganda tried to make it out that they had. They were forced from their homes with their hands in the air, and they were tear-gassed again. Well, that's another war crime. So as far as accomplishing anything, the Israelis have certainly lost the propaganda war, and they've lost public opinion war. I think they achieved nothing, and the Palestinians are seeing this as a victory, and so they should.
Well, Saad, what do you think? I mean, if we look at the regime and what it did, how aggressive it was with the planes and the drones, and just a total war zone creating in this populated area. I mean, one, doesn't that show actually an entity that is weak and fearful? And two, after doing all of this and not even staying there 48 hours, I mean, doesn't that actually also say that they couldn't handle that, what was going on, because the resistance was consistent? And doesn't it actually show the weakness of the regime and the strength of the resistance?
Exactly. Good evening to you evening. And your viewers, and also in Midland. It's quite clear, Ms. Hashimi, that the Israelis, especially in the last 2 years, the growing of the Palestinian resistance, it started in Jenin, and then it moved to Nablus with the Arin al-Usud, and then to Balata refugee camp, and then to Tulkarem, and now also in Jericho, in Aqba Jabr refugee camp. So it is spreading all over the West Bank. And this kind of resistance, which started to come around, first of all, it has a unity between all Palestinian fighters from different factions, which is something also alarming for the Israelis. And they started to develop their also methods of resisting, and especially in creating these kind of new explosions, explosives, devices. And just recently that they discovered they were trying to develop some kind of rockets. So from the Israeli point of view, this is absolutely not acceptable. Now, bearing in your mind that they, Palestinian Authority, who's controlling all these areas, they could not control the refugee camps and these areas. And they told that to the Israelis and the Americans quite, obviously and quite bluntly, that we can't, and this is Israel should do, these kind of things. So the Israelis are trying to do it, but they achieve nothing, definitely, and their resistance is continuing and growing. But the most important thing, I believe, after, experience in Jenin, that the population in Jenin and in the whole West Bank, there was a huge, enormous support to the Palestinian resistance. Palestinians donate money, donate blood, and donate areas for those who were evicted from the refugee camps. They offer them their homes. They offer the accommodations. They offer, you know, all kind of, some hotels even offered them, you know, to come and stay. So people were all around the resistance and supporting the resistance. And if the Israeli thought that they could suppress the resistance in one operation like this with so brutal way, definitely the failure was so huge. From the perspective of the Israeli, they think that they could manage these kind of things by power and by more power, even as Smotrich has a statement talking about that. If they could not, you know, understand by using power, we will use more power against the Palestinians. So they have to understand that there is no people under occupation and under such apartheid colonial regime will continue to live calmly unless, you know, there will be also always a resistance, and they will resist this kind of colonial power.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sarah, do you think that regime's rulers thought that despite all the death and destruction and the uprooting of families that they caused, that basically they could keep control over the propaganda war? Because you mentioned earlier that they're losing the propaganda war. I want to talk about that side of things.
I think the Israelis know that they can act with impunity. They can get away with, for example, committing a war crime that's actually quite old. I think it was in the 1949 Geneva Convention that the targeting of ambulances, of medical staff, and of the wounded, preventing the wounded from being treated. I mean, that's quite a grievous war crime. And that's in Article 35 and Article 21. Of the 1949 Geneva Convention. So look where we are now. I mean, since the days of Florence Nightingale, we've allowed the wounded to be treated. And it's almost medieval that they're continuing to commit these very grievous crimes against humanity, where they're stopping people, children who have been injured or shot in the neck, from having their lives saved. That's very barbaric. So do they think that they can get away with it? Well, yes, they are getting away with it. This is the thing. How many war crimes do they need to commit before the EU or the UN actually imposes the sanctions that they occasionally threaten? I know that Antonio Guterres has threatened to, he has said that it was disproportionate use of lethal force, and he has condemned it. But this is, again, it's lip service. Mm-hmm. If these words aren't translated into action, then technically these international laws that we are meant to abide by don't exist.
Right.
As in, you know, the words of Richard Falk, if you do not enforce international law, then it doesn't exist. And so I think technically the Israelis are getting away with it, despite what the international community thinks, or despite what we as the general public think. I don't think they care.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
That side, because as Sarah just talked about, the UN has this time condemned Tel Aviv's excessive force. Also, we saw European Union convoy touring Jenin and basically saying that the Israeli attack on Jenin violated international law. So I want to know, what does this mean? When this has been said, what should actually be the natural step then for the UN or for the EU?
Okay, yeah, well, first of all, I do agree with your guest, Sarah, that yes, it is a lip service. So far, you know, we did hear only some statements here and there condemning what was going on. But in reality, if it comes to the United Nations, if they would dare to go for a resolution to condemn Israel, we know, you know, and everybody knows that the Americans will step and they will, you know, put their veto there. So there is no chance for the United Nations to take a real action. But I think that this is also a cumulative issue that if we get a condemnation now, it's fine because we know that they couldn't do anything without the approval of the United Nations and the Security Council generally, including the British also who are in the Security Council. So they are not going to do anything. But I believe that people do have different views all over Europe. When you mention Europe, the European countries in general, the EU, also they said that the Israelis are using the excessive force and all that things. But at the same time, if you look at these countries individually, like Germany or other countries, who are saying that the Israelis have the right to defend themselves. To defend themselves from whom? This is, you know, became a really, really, really sick joke. This self-defense, and they are, you know, showing themselves always the victim, and whatever they do, that's just to protect themselves. This is something, you know, people started to really get sick of the hearing this kind of news. Yet some of the countries are still using it, but the difference is that people on the ground, grassroots organizations in Europe and in, even in America, are now growing and saying no to all these kind of actions. We hope that this will reach the level to influence the policies of these countries, not only to remain on the grassroots level.
Well, Sarah, you know, in wars, I mean, if we look at the Ukraine-Russia war, we saw in the beginning how the children, especially in Ukraine, were highlighted and talked about their suffering. We talk about the Palestinian children that are always under pressure. And we look at the children in Jenin that night, waking up to these bombings and attacks and absolute terror. Are we going to see condemnation, at least, of what the children have gone through? Will we see any accountability, at least for the children who have been injured, who have experienced this terror?
Not in the same way that you see the, in Ukraine. I think there's an awful lot of double standards. There were some videos of children saving their pets. They were clearly terrorized. They were clearly running for their lives in some instances. And you know, the posts on Twitter, you know, people were looking at them and horrified, but it's nothing like you will see if it was a Ukrainian child. And so, yes, the bigoted, and there's racism, and they we're never going to get away from that. I think where Palestinian children are concerned, our world leaders are not interested, but the people are. So, yeah, it was very disturbing footage. And I'm surprised that all we have is a condemnation. Obviously, I think you're right, as your guest said, you know, getting the sanctions imposed, the US will always veto them. But there has to be a dismantlement of the UN and the way it's run in order to make the changes that we need to protect the Palestinian children who are refugees and who should be protected people. Unfortunately, under UNRWA, they're probably the least protected refugees in the world. And so we need to dismantle how the UN is run. And that's a big task that we have ahead of us.
Saad, I want to look at the other side of things, and that's the Palestinian resistance that we have seen unprecedented now, solidarity and dedication to liberating the people. Is there a schism, though, when we look at the growth and the strength of the newer resistance groups, and then we see the Palestinian Authority as influence waning amongst Palestinians because of their cooperation with the Israeli regime? I want to talk about that side of things and what that means.
Well, yes, as I've just mentioned before, the Palestinian resistance are growing. The thing that we can notice that the Palestinian people are ahead in their thinking than the Palestinian leadership, including the Palestinian Authority, or particularly the Palestinian Authority. The people, by their own nature, they started to realize that this regime, it's an apartheid regime, it's a colonialist regime, and there is no way that we can talk to this regime. And we have to come back to the idea which we have before 1974, that we should change the whole scene and the whole situation, and to fight against this regime as a regime as a whole, not occupation only in 1967 borders, but as a whole, you know, as Israel as an entity, as a country and or a state, and the Zionist as an ideology. So this is the idea of the resistance now, to resist everything. And as I said, the Palestinian people, by their nature, by their sense, they sense that we should go there. The Palestinian Authority are trying on their own to wage this kind of diplomatic work here and there. But we know the hypocrisy of the international community, and we know to what extent these countries are in support by the end of the day to Israel, because they are not going to be in contrast with the Americans for their own interest. It was said many times by the European. We know that Israel is you know, very bad in this respect, and violating all international laws. But at the same time, we can't do anything because the Americans are you know, allies, and our interest with America is more important even from the international law. So we know that there is a hypocrisy. Palestinians should depend on themselves in resisting this occupation. Palestinian Authority should be reformed democratically or otherwise, but to be a Palestinian Authority to support the people standing, and to support the people resistance, and to help the Palestinian in resisting the occupation, to end this occupation, not to go only by a diplomatic means and pleading here and there, and please protect us, and please I don't know what. This is not going to get us anywhere unless we start a real resistance, united, all the Palestinian, to resist this occupation once and for all.
Well, Sarah, do you think that increasingly we're seeing world opinion starting to turn against the Israeli regime? We're not talking about the actual countries, but civil society. Do you see it increasingly happen, or what's your assessment of that? And how important is that for Tel Aviv, that public opinion?
I think public opinion is changing, and I think that the movement, the solidarity movement for the Palestinian people, is growing, and it's growing very quickly. And you only have to have this sort of terrorist attack on civilians in a refugee camp in Jenin for it to recruit even more people, not just the Palestinians into their own resistance factions, but here and abroad in other countries as well. So, I recently came back from a protest the other day, and I couldn't believe how many people had traveled to the north of England from the south all the way just to be present to support the people of Jenin. And maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we would have struggled to get numbers, but people traveled in their droves. So, no, this is actually helping to recruit solidarity for the Palestinians. It's raising awareness towards the Palestinian cause. A lot more young people are getting involved, and a lot more young Palestinians are getting involved. There seems to be a sort of, you know, it's happening both there and here, that the younger generation are probably the ones who are going to take this forward and actually free Palestine. It'll probably be past my lifetime. But, you know, there is generally a massive youth movement for Palestine here in Britain, and I think across in other countries as well. So, yeah, the Israelis are not achieving anything. When you, your very first question about, you know, what have they achieved? What they've achieved is that they're losing the social media war, they're losing the public opinion war. Brand Israel, and I put that in very big speech marks, has taken a battering. And they're trying to make out that it was a success to appease the Israeli citizens who are sort of inciting for more thousands of more Palestinians to be killed. But what they're doing this end is they're recruiting more solidarity for the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. And it's good to see.
Okay, well, Saad, 1 minute we have left. I mean, your perspective, isn't the regime by its actions just proving to the resistance that the only way to victory is resistance?
Well, yes, absolutely. We've learned that even from history. We know that each and every colonial power, they also dug their own grave once they occupy any country. So sooner or later, it's supposed that people supposed to resist this occupation and this colonial power. So it's quite well understood. But even with Israel, it's even more, because the aim for the Israelis or this, if you like, regime is to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians. And actions every day provide us with thousands of evidence of the violation of the human rights, the violation of the international law, and the violation for even everything people do believe in. So they are providing us every day because they can't act but in this way. And they should expect that the only way to answer or to stand against these kind of actions, especially settlers and the Israeli government, is by resistance. So, okay. Yes, they by their actions, they are improving the Palestinian resistance.
And on that note, we're out of time. Appreciate both of you being with us. Sarah Wilkinson, pro-Palestinian activist out of Midlands, UK. Saad Nim, professor of political science, Birzeit University, Ramallah. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Dear listeners, now let's listen to the 15th and 16th verses of chapter Nur.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم إذ تلقونه بألسنتكم وتقولون بأفواهكم ما ليس لكم به علم وتقولون بأفواهكم ما ليس لكم به علم وتحسبونه هينا وهو عند الله عظيم.
when you received it with your tongues and said with your mouths that of which you had no knowledge and thought it was insignificant while it was, in the sight of Allah, tremendous.
ولولا إذ سمعتموه قلتم ما يكون لنا أن نتكلم بهذا سبحانك هذا بهتان عظيم.
And why, when you heard it, did you not say, "It is not for us to speak of this"? Exalted are you, O Allah. This is a great slander.
So, this verse, dear listeners, continues reprimanding those believers, those people who did not think well of the others. They just thought well of themselves and they believed what the rumor mongers were spreading in the society. And they considered this calumny a very little thing. Actually, this 15th verse, dear listeners, refers to their three great sins that were related to the affair. Firstly, they admitted this rumor by taking it from the tongues of each other. So they consciously or unconsciously helped spreading that accusation. Second, they spread this rumor and recited it for others while they were not certain of it. And that's an important point. We see what happens at the result of this spreading the rumors without being certain of it. And third, they regarded it as an easy trifle act. It was not only about the reputation and honor of two Muslims, but also it involved the reputation of the Islamic society. Thinking too little of rumor and using it as an amusing tool. That's why those three great sins are mentioned, actually. It is interesting that in one place the phrase "with your tongues" is used and in another place the phrase "with your mouth" is used. Although all words are uttered through tongue and mouth, the verse refers to the matter that neither their admission nor their distribution of this rumor was based on any reason. They only fell back on words that were nonsense, baseless, and those words that resulted from the movement of tongue and the mouth, they had no reason, no justifiable reason, no witness to believe in that false accusation. So it says in the next verse, لولا إذ سمعتموه قلتم ما يكون لنا أن نتكلم بهذا. Why did you not say when you heard it, "It is not right of us to speak of this"?
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
أيها الناس أنتم
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, dear listeners, some of those believers actually were rebuked because they did not regard the accused ones with a good consideration. In the previous verses, we read that the Almighty Allah said, لَوْلَا إِذْ سَمِعْتُمُهُ ظَنَّ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتُ بِأَنفُسِهِمْ خَيْرًا. Those believers, men and women, when heard of that false accusations, thought well of themselves. And they did not say this is a manifest lie. And this is what happens here as well. They must have wondered at such a great calumny. In fact, they were rebuked because they did not regard the accused ones with good intentions, good considerations. They did not think of them well. But here it is said that not only they must regard them good, but also they must not have expressed such a calumny, let alone they themselves proceed to spread it. They must have got wondered on such great calumny. They must have remembered the pureness of Allah. They must have sought refuge with Him, subhanahu wa ta'ala, for being not involved in spreading this rumor of calumny. لَوْلَا إِذْ سَمِعْتُمُوهُ قُلْتُمْ مَا يَكُونُ لَنَا أَن نَتَكَلَّمَ بِهَذَا سُبْحَانَكَ هَذَا بُهْتَانٌ عَظِيمٌ. This is what they should have said. سُبْحَانَكَ, glory be to you, O Lord. هَذَا بُهْتَانٌ عَظِيمٌ. This is a great calumny. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me, worry ends when faith begins.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Cluster bombs, which the administration of United States President Joe Biden recently classified as a war crime, will now be sent to Ukraine in Washington's latest escalation of the unrest. Cluster munitions are banned by over half the world because they release dozens of bomblets, which often remain unexploded for decades after a conflict has ended. They cause more casualties among civilians than among combatants, and the United States is sending bombs with the imprecise grenades used in the 1991 invasion of Iraq. From bombing irrigation dams in Korea to Agent Orange in Vietnam to using chemical weapons against Iranians, the United States and their Western partners continue to use tactics which the global majority often finds immoral, even during wartime.
These are omnicide weapons. They're the worst atrocities in history, each in a can. Do reduce any sense of our moral authority in this war, since we're not in this to protect civilians. We're not in this to protect Ukrainians, who we've maneuvered into being our foot soldiers and into dying for American interests while Americans sit comfortably at home.
With diplomacy off the table and Kiev's long-awaited counteroffensive a failure, Washington admitted that they are sending the bombs because they are running out of traditional ammunition.
Because of the dramatically high expenditure rates of artillery by Ukraine and by Russia, where we need to build a bridge from where we are today to when we have enough monthly production of unitary rounds, this is the moment to begin the construction of that bridge so that there isn't any period over this summer or heading into this fall when Ukraine is short on artillery.
Escalation is reaching such levels that some analysts in Russia are actually advocating the use of nuclear weapons against Western Europe as the only way to restore the fear of war among Western leaders and to finally end the 9-year conflict in Ukraine. The United States used similar logic against Japan in World War II.
Our government says that stresses that Russia has been using cluster bombs through the war. Russian President Putin is, if anything, unpopular in his country to the extent that he's the most popular politician there. But he gets grief for having gone into Ukraine too soft in an attempt not to kill the civilians that ultimately this civil war has been about. It's been a pogrom by Kiev and by ethnic Ukrainians in the west of the country against its east.
NATO members will meet next week in Lithuania, where many fear an even more significant expansion of the war will be announced. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Outside Israel's London embassy, thousands of pro-Palestine protesters vented their anger over Israel's raid in the Jenin refugee camp in occupied Palestine. Speakers condemned not only Israel's crimes, but the ongoing support Britain offers to Tel Aviv.
The horrific footage which is coming out of occupied Palestine by the hour and going viral on social media has sent shockwaves across the globe. These protesters have come out in large numbers here in London to vent their anger and to condemn the British authorities for their so-called complicity in the Israeli crimes against the occupied Palestinian people.
Protest organisers called Israel's assault on the refugee camp barbaric and urged the UK government to abandon plans to outlaw anti-Israel boycott campaigns, including the BDS movement.
It singles out Israel for special treatment, for protection from accountability, which is completely shameful. Why list one country and say, no matter what government is in place, that Israel should not be boycotted? The bill is dangerous on so many fronts. It should never have been brought forward. And it will be shameful if the UK passed this bill.
There is no such right as the right to self-defense for an occupying power. The Palestinian people who have been fighting occupation and fighting for liberation are the ones that have the right to defend themselves. And this is nothing but a justification and a deflection from Israeli perpetual violence against the Palestinians.
Israel and Gaza exchanged fire Wednesday as Israel's regime pulled out from their two-day raid on the camp. At least 12 Palestinians have been killed, many just teenagers. The Palestinian Red Cross said around 3,000 have been forced to flee their homes to escape the violence. Despite the killings, the UK remains committed to pursuing the anti-BDS bill, making it harder for critics of Israel to support Palestine in Britain. Robert Carter, London.
After decades of activism and art, the collection that has been a lifetime in the making was unveiled. Sandra Wafter's Nakba, Palestinians' Ongoing Dispossession.
I thought it's time to go full circle and try and tap into another form, another method of educating people on the Palestinian flight, because 75 years on, it's still unrelenting, unremitting. As we've seen a couple of days ago in Jenin camp, the onslaughts just carry on relentlessly. And one tries in any way, every way, to shed light on this.
The launch of the collection has come amidst growing tensions in the region. This after a violent Israeli incursion into the Jenin refugee camp, resulting in the killings of yet more Palestinians.
The one key word here is ongoing. The Nakba never, ever ended. It just stops and starts, but there is always strife, there is always oppression, there is always colonization, there is always land theft. It just does not stop. So I just really look forward to the day when we can have a commemoration of the Nakba, because it would finally mean that it's ended, and this hasn't happened yet.
Wafter's work is visceral and emotive, but the artist wants to impart a message that goes beyond the gallery and into the very corridors of power.
You would think that the authors of our dispossession would hold for a minute and reconsider and consider standing on the right side to restitute this problem, this huge catastrophe that they have created. In fact, they are doubling down on shielding Israeli atrocities. It's very shameful, actually. 107 years now since the Balfour Declaration is just ridiculous. Britain has a chance to redress the extreme travesty of justice that it has birthed instead of going the other way and doubling down on shielding war crimes, in effect.
Artists like Sandra Wafter know the value their craft can make in keeping the memories of the Nakba front and center.
Art is powerful. It can evoke memories of a particular place or a moment in time. It can also be an exemplary tool of resistance. And for artists who are concerned and focused with justice for the Palestinians, well, their message is so important, more important than ever before.
The collection, Nakba, Palestinians' Ongoing Dispossession, is available now. Amina Taylor, London.
As the Israeli regime's biggest attack on Jenin refugee camp in the West Bank fails to weaken the Palestinian resistance factions, solidarity gatherings continue to take place in Lebanon and other parts of the world. Hamas representative in Lebanon has told Press TV that the Palestinian people have taken the decision to resist until the occupied territories are liberated and there is no turning back.
The Palestinian people have made up their mind that they will face the Israeli military machine with all courage and that they will continue until they remove the occupation, not only from the West Bank, but from all of Palestine. What is happening today in Jenin is a smaller version of what is happening on all of Palestine. If this superior military machine of the Israelis is incapable of facing a small refugee camp, then how would it face Gaza or the entire West Bank?
Lebanese people who have gathered in several parts across the country in a show of solidarity with the Palestinians say they have also lived through decades of Israeli aggressions against Lebanon, and they believe that resistance is the sole way to end the occupation, as was the case in Lebanon.
There is no other way to face the Israeli occupation than to continue to resist. The Palestinian people tried all means in order to liberate their land. It was a fiasco. So we need now to consolidate the resistance approach and to have a wider solidarity with this resistance, Palestinian resistance, in the occupied territory.
With the Israeli aggression against the Palestinian, they are trying to do the aggression over and over again. And the Palestinian people, starting from Jenin, trying to liberate first Jenin, but I think it will spread all over Palestine and probably it will go way abroad.
Jenin camp reflects the real bloody face of the Israeli occupation, the loss of innocent lives, the destruction of homes, the displacement of big families. They are the realities that the Israeli occupation can't ignore anymore. Today we are gathering together in a public space to send a powerful message for the Palestinian people and for the resistance that we are showing our unity and we are showing our position against the violence, injustice, and the silence in the world.
As you enter any refugee camp in Lebanon, you are greeted with posters for martyrs. And refugees there express their unwavering support for resistance fighters inside Palestine.
We are not in solidarity with Jenin. We are one with Jenin. We, the Palestinians in the diaspora and inside Palestine, are one entity, and what is happening inside Jenin is a step towards the liberation of Palestine and a step towards our return to Palestine. What we saw in Jenin gives us hope that liberation is near.
We've become used to their crimes. They bargained that the old generation is gone, but they were stunned how the new generation is even more steadfast and courageous and ready to face them.
After 2 days of Israeli attacks on Jenin, at least 12 Palestinians were killed and dozens more were injured.
The United Nations says it is alarmed at the scale of Israel's assault on Jenin, yet people of Lebanon and Palestine who have witnessed firsthand decades of Israeli atrocities say there is nothing alarming about the aggression. However, they all have a collective conviction that the resistance will turn victorious. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Out of the classrooms and under the streets, hundreds of thousands of school teachers here and across England on strike for 48 hours this week in what's become a battle for dignity and better wages.
We want to be with our children. We really do. You know, it's coming towards the end of term. We want to enjoy every day with them. But at the same time, we recognise that the fight for children's future has to involve strike action because this government doesn't listen.
There are others who are listening. Parents and students.
These strikes have to happen. Obviously, they're impacting in the short term, but with extra pay, teachers will be more motivated and they can help in the long run rather than them withering out.
And withering out they are. Underfunded and overworked, the teachers are not just striking, they're leaving the profession. Gillian Keegan, who runs the Department of Education, says the government has made a fair and reasonable pay offer to teachers. Yet her department has refused to publish recommendations for allegedly a higher pay offer by the Independent School Teachers Review Body, a decision that unions say risks dragging out the current dispute.
Part of the argument here is how a pay rise should be paid for. The government says schools should use their existing budgets to fund any pay increases. But the teachers have been pushing back, saying the school budgets are already stretched and that any wage rise should be fully funded by the government.
And it's not just the teachers' unions who aren't being heard. Also, workers across the public sector, such as transport and health, who have supported each other over the months. Solidarity that has scared the government into responding with a set of draconian laws to make it difficult for strikes to take place. In an atmosphere of uncertainty and with inflation still high, the strikers here are defiant, saying they will push ahead with industrial action until their demands are met. Saeed Bouriza, London.
The burning of the Holy Quran in Sweden has ignited a protest in the capital Sana'a, where U.S. and Israeli flags were set on fire in the streets. Protesters also denounced the latest military operations by the Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. Members of the Palestinian-based Islamic Jihad resistance movement also attended the rally. They called on the Muslim world to unite and counter the Israeli occupying forces.
We came out to tell the world that we are with Palestinians and with Jenin refugee camp, and we are ready to support them. We in Yemen are ready to go to war with the Israeli enemy, who only seems to understand the language of war and violence.
We came out today to call on the Muslim world to defend the Holy Quran and to support the Palestinian cause, which is the Muslim cause. This is an obligation for Muslims to strive and revive and unite against the enemies of Allah.
Some observers believe Israelis, along with the West, have a hand in promoting those who insult Islam.
The individuals who burned the Holy Quran or who insulted Islam represent the aspirations and stance of the West, which promotes the burning of Quran and protects those who engage in such activities even on the Eid holiday. This is done just to insult Muslims worldwide. We will no longer stay silent.
Many Yemeni protesters we spoke with expressed their willingness to go to war with the Israeli regime and any state that supports insulting Muslims' holy book or occupying Muslim holy lands.
Israeli officials say the military operations in Jenin aim to strike what they call a terrorist hub in the occupied West Bank city. Now the protesters here say the Muslim world should become united against what they describe the terrorist Israeli regime. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
Muslims in Afghanistan celebrate Eid al-Ghadir with different ceremonies every year. This place in Kabul is only one of the hundreds where people have gathered to celebrate this day and share the joy together.
Today is the day that Islam came to perfection, because on this day back then, Prophet Muhammad raised Imam Ali's hands and said, Ali is my successor.
Today, these people who are followers of Imam Ali have gathered here to celebrate the joyous occasion by praising the Prophet and Imam Ali.
This Eid marks the day that Prophet Muhammad appointed Ali ibn Abi Talib as his successor by raising his hand and saying to the huge crowd who were following him on his last Hajj pilgrimage, "Whomever I am his leader, Ali is his leader."
Imam Ali, peace be upon him, is the source of justice, crier of justice, and symbol of justice, not only in Islamic community, but in human society. When you speak of justice, the name of Ali is there. We honor Imam Ali because we honor justice. Along with that, Ali was the most honest and a man of virtue.
Imam Ali is the first man who returned the call of Prophet Muhammad and embraced Islam. That is why his most famous nickname is Amir al-Mu'minin, that means the head of the believers.
The personality of Imam Ali has drawn much attention throughout history. Today might be an opportunity for everyone to know about the man who once said, no wealth is like wisdom, and no indigence is like ignorance. Abdullah Mirzada, Kabul.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand,